Jeff and Eric are best friends, as only two film critics could be. They bonded over movies and the Portland rain. It's the kind of romance only seen on TV. Then one day Jeff had to move away to far off San Diego, where it's sunny every day. Eric had to cry, he said, why, oh why? We have to find a way to make sure our friendship doesn't die. We'll have a long-distance relationship, the kind you see on TV, so you know it's legit. We'll watch our movies alone, and then we'll meet online. Record ourselves a podcast, and everything will be fine. Now we have Movie BS with Eric D. Snyder and Jeff Mayer. It's Movie BS. These critics are best friends forever.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Baron Snyder. I'm your host, Jeff Baer. With me, as always, my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Hello, I'm Eric D. Snyder, the host of this show. That's my co-host, Jeff Baer. Welcome to one and all to episode 260 of Movie BS with Baer and Snyder, brought to you by oneofus.net.
That was seamless. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. You tired already? We just started.
You know, I shouldn't be tired because I've had 4 cups of coffee and 2 Coke Zeros.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
For people listening at home, it's 7:30 a.m. right now.
No, I was just at the took the car in. Mm. I had a 10 a.m. appointment, and I went up at about 10:50, and I was just like, "Hey!" And then I looked outside, and I was like, "Oh no!" Like my car was still sitting in the
exact same place. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it was one of those things.
Was this at the dealership?
Yes.
Okay. My experience with making an appointment for taking your car in is that you might just as well write down a number on a piece of paper and throw it in the toilet.
100%. Then here's the thing. Like, we haven't – since we have the new car, we're going to the dealer because it was like a free thing. And, you know, yes, worth it, but I hadn't experienced that. So I actually talked to him. I was like, okay, so this 10 a.m. thing, like, what mm-hmm. was that? Mm-hmm. And he was like, that's like the order then once you get there that your car will be seen in.
Gotcha.
And he was like, there's like 8 of us doing this. And I didn't know exactly what that meant. But apparently that meant everybody could have a 10 a.m. appointment.
Right.
So those,
sure.
There's 8 cars at 10 a.m. and forget the fact that we're already an hour behind on everything else. And
right.
He was polite enough, and I made sure to be polite enough.
I'm sure.
And that was the end of that. And Dylan was a huge hit.
Oh, good.
Because I had him there the whole time. Mm-hmm, so,
No, yeah. Auto mechanics love small children.
High fives were given.
Oh, good.
Some handshakes were given. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was about it.
You know, when I was...
Wait, go ahead.
When I was a kid, for several years, my dad was an auto mechanic.
I know this. That's right.
Which made him very handy to have around the house.
Yeah.
And still to this day.
Well, mainly the cars, though, right?
I guess, yeah, not really. Cars? Yeah, not really, yeah. In the house. Yeah, he didn't do much in the house. But out in the garage, out in the yard. Not in the yard. We weren't white trash. We were white trash. We didn't have cars in our yard. Out on the street is what I meant.
Did you never had your cars parked in the grass in the front yard?
Not in the front yard. Good. There was a car in the backyard. There have been various cars. We had a large backyard, and it backed up against an alley, so there was no, like, nobody drove past and saw it or whatever. Yeah. It was just... And there were various times where various cars were in the backyard, yes.
Because your dad was working on them.
Working on them, yeah.
Or were they just resting? Were the cars just resting in the backyard?
I feel like something may have been resting for a while, but it was never like a indefinite thing. There was always something specific. This car is going to be here for this length of time until, yeah.
All right, so that's all the movies that we have time for. Hot Pursuit up first. Hot Pursuit, everybody. Let's talk about it.
Hey, everybody likes Reese Witherspoon. Everybody, I almost said everybody likes Sofia Vergara, but that's not true. Everybody has at some point liked Sofia Vergara, at least for a minute.
Yes, and I would say Sofia Vergara is the She's at the top of the list for the reasons that I stopped watching Modern Family. Mm-hmm. When did you stop? You stopped after two seasons of Modern Family. Am I correct on this?
It was like two, three years ago. So after however many seasons that had been, because
wasn't it longer than that? Because I lasted one extra season than you, and I just kept telling you how jealous I was of you for not watching the show anymore.
Because it stopped being a funny modern twist on the classic sitcom formula, and it just become the classic sitcom formula.
Yes, everything was absolutely regurgitated.
Yeah,
and specifically, I felt like her performance and mannerisms were taken up a notch that I didn't necessarily appreciate. So then it was more about her cleavage or more about her accent.
Right, right. That, which is what happens when sitcoms start to get desperate. They go back to the same thing. Oh, so-and-so likes to eat. So-and-so's fat. So-and-so is chesty. Like they do all the basic things.
But then she goes out and she does Machete Kills, and I realize, oh, goodness, I hate watching this woman act.
You just can't stand her.
It's gotten worse. Then she does Chef, and I'm like, never mind. She's absolutely delightful.
You're fickle, Jeff Bayer. That's what you are.
Don't worry. She's back to being terribly annoying.
Chesty Colombian Sofia Vergara and diminutive pixie stick Reese Witherspoon. Reese plays, people would never guess this, she plays an uptight cop, totally by the books. She's a stickler for the rules, and she's the kind of cop who says I'm going to commandeer your vehicle instead of I'm going to take your car? Which, to be fair, my friend Rob the cop speaks the same way. Okay. I found that to be accurate in the way that cops.
That's
speak,
totally fair.
Some of them.
Now, a couple quick questions about Rob the cop, since we're talking about him. Mm-hmm. Did he literally grow up in the back of a police car?
He did not grow up in the back of a police car. No,
because she. What's her character's name? Cooper.
Cooper. Yeah.
Cooper does.
The film starts with a montage of her grow from baby up to teenage years, always in the back of her dad's police car, which I feel like as a ride-along, she'd be in the front. I feel like if you're riding along with a cop, you're not in the back with the people who've been arrested.
But is there some sort of thing? So with just that information, we have a hunch of like, oh, maybe the mom wasn't present or maybe dad was maybe he meant well, but maybe he's not a very good cop because that's not an intelligent thing to do, and it's probably illegal.
Well, you can take civilians on ride-alongs. I mean, they showed us the montage. Let's be charitable and assume that she went on a ride-along like once a year.
No way. No
let's,
way.
Let's assume once or twice a year you should go out for an afternoon with her dad.
No. No. Every single day, every Monday single through day. Friday. Well, she didn't do any school. Maybe, she just was in the back of that police car.
Maybe it was a small town and there was never any real crime. So it was just sort of a might as well
nope,
bring
it was the
along.
Same town. It was the same town because everybody knew her dad. Yep.
That's true.
anyway, it's never explained.
She's always... It doesn't need explaining other than it means she grew up wanting to be a cop.
Does she have a mom?
It doesn't matter. Who cares?
Okay. To me, that gave me the impression of not once or twice a year. That gave me the impression of she lived there.
It could go either way. The movie doesn't tell us. The point is she grew up wanting to be a cop because she was always with her dad, the cop.
And American Girl. Sung by a woman. So you get this. This movie's all about women. Like, right. That's from the start. You can
very,
tell.
Very girl power. And so
it's
Cooper,
like, you know how you just want strong, progressive women who don't bicker and don't stereotype and play off of those stereotypes. like, that's what you want. Mm-hmm. You're not getting in here.
And so she's in San Antonio, and she has to go along with a federal marshal to – accompany some drug lord and his wife who are going to testify. And long story short, winds up with Cooper and Mrs. Drug Lord, Mrs. Riva, Sofia Vergara, winds up with them on the run because they got drug lords after him and they've got some dirty cops. Some dirty cops are involved.
Yeah,
as you may recall from every movie you ever saw in the 80s, this is a very, very 80s movie.
Very 80s movie.
Oh, the plot points and we identified this guy because he had a tattoo on his wrist. Oh, the dirty cops and the surprise. This one that you thought was good is not good. And Oh my goodness! And the mayhem. Oh, and they're driving cars, and there's an incident with an animal, of course. I knew it. About 20 minutes in, as they're having their shenanigans in the car, I thought they're going to run into an animal or something. And then, sure enough, there's a situation with a deer.
Eventually, kind of. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Sofia Vergara is, she's channeling Fran Drescher a little bit with her screams, so that's not good.
She was crying, open mouth crying, like Lucy Ricardo.
Yeah. And you have to sit there and listen to it, which is unfortunate. This was a shocking surprise. Mm. They ended up at a biker bar. No bikes were knocked over. I couldn't believe it.
I found
that absolutely phenomenal that they did not knock over one bike, which then knocked over a series of bikes, and that helped them get away or infuriate somebody or win the day.
Yeah,
was amazing.
Yeah, I guess it's not bikers that they were running from, so they didn't need to.
No,
yeah.
But still.
And when they made their hasty escape from that place, they ought to have knocked over some bikes. I agree. Here's what kind of idiots these women are. When they first realize that they are in trouble and they need to flee, they're driving away, and Cooper is driving the car. And she needs to call into the police. Her radio is broken. She has to call into the – so she gets out her iPhone. She, for some reason, can't dial 911 while she's driving. So she hands the phone to Mrs. Riva in the back seat, telling her what police codes to call in. Like a million instructions that would be so much easier. Oh, I'll just do it myself while I'm driving. But no, she gives the phone to her, and then she drops it out of the car so they don't have a phone. That's the kind of idiots we're talking about. The dumb one can't dial and drive at the same time, so she gives it to the dumber one who drops the phone out of the car.
And on top of that, the actual sequence is filmed as such that they wouldn't have actually seen the iPhone get run over and smashed by the car, but yet they both knew that it had gotten run over and smashed,
which is
just laziness on that regard as well.
They
captured the scene.
Right. They couldn't go back because they were fleeing. They couldn't go back anyway to get it because they were fleeing.
Hang on.
What?
They were fleeing.
Right.
They did not know if their pursuers were actually chasing them. And right after that, they did just stop. Because that's when the car gets crashed.
Oh, that's right.
And,
yeah, yeah.
And poof, a bunch of cocaine goes up in the air. And we find out that Reese Witherspoon is terrible acting like she's high on cocaine.
Oh, the opposite. That was the one funny thing I liked.
You
one
liked
funny part
that.
Of the movie
I
was
did not
her
care
on cocaine.
For that at all.
No, I thought that was funny. That was funny.
Did you like it when they talked about their periods and men found it icky? Then they were like, we'll give you whatever you want.
Here's another thing that I almost liked. This movie almost has some interesting ideas about making fun of the male gaze and subverting the way that women are mistreated. Where, like in that case, where they use talk of their periods as a distraction, knowing it will gross out the men, and the time where Mrs. Riva distract someone with her boobs, knowing it will work. There were a few things like that where it's women sort of turning turning their sexuality into a weapon, turning it back against the oppressors. Yeah. But then most of the movie is just dumb. And so it's like those ideas were kind of wasted on what was otherwise a dumb movie.
And it taps into really basic stereotypes such as like, oh, look at a rich woman loving her shoes. And sure, there's something else going on there. But for 80% of the movie, it doesn't matter what's going on there. It's just talking about a rich woman loving her shoes and dragging around luggage.
Right.
So that's awful. Sofia Vergara at one point does utter the line, I can't stand the way that you talk to Reese Witherspoon. And she's being serious,
that's
even
funny.
Though. And then later, of course, actually multiple times, I feel like somebody refers to Mrs. Riva as not being able to understand her.
Right.
Yet we, the audience, can fully understand her.
I don't know about fully.
It's still that thing of like, it's like that played up thing of like, we're actually understanding what she's saying.
But
you are too.
But she does have a super thick accent.
Oh, goodness.
I didn't have a problem with that. I had a problem with Officer Cooper, born and raised in San Antonio, doesn't recognize a longhorn when she sees one.
Yeah, that was annoying.
That doesn't make any sense. That's stupid.
Right. Especially because she's a fairly intelligent woman.
Yeah.
That she's portrayed that way.
This goes back – it reminded me of my problem with 9 to 5 that I recently watched, where these they're characters who are presented as being normal, regular people but who in fact are idiots who keep doing idiotic things.
I was – their bonding, the way that they bonded was one of them that had a dead brother and one of them had a dead dad. So then they took a second and realized, like, oh, people are people. Maybe I shouldn't be a jerk to somebody because maybe somebody's died in their life, which is just pathetic storytelling.
It's true, though.
They almost ruined Black Betty for me. I worship the song Black Betty, and that's what they chose to have their fisticuff moments. So many dropped guns. Classic 80s dropped guns.
Oh, clumsy. And I'm trying to get out this window, but all of a sudden I'm clumsy and can't climb out of a window.
There's one part that is actually I think it is the worst storytelling moment easily in the last year.
All right.
There's two dirty cops, and they are looking for them. The girls go into hiding with the help of a man. And somehow, and please tell me where I've missed a moment. Somehow, they end up at the hotel room.
Right.
They knock on the door. Then they shoot the door without knowing. We never find out how they tracked them down.
Yeah, no, we don't know.
Or why they were so 100% confident that they could actually shoot their way into that room.
I'll give them that if they found the hotel, they would also know which room they were in. I'll give them that. But I have no idea how they found the hotel.
How would they? Because somebody at the front desk would say, yes, two women matching that description checked in.
By whatever source knew that they were at the hotel, the source would also know what room they're in. I'll give them that. But I don't know what that source is. I don't know how they would know the hotel.
Like, that's just an amazing hole in just storytelling.
Yeah,
like,
unless,
that's just shocking.
Yeah, yeah, there wasn't – because they hadn't told anyone that they
were at a checkpoint. They were at a checkpoint and had no reason to believe that the women went through the checkpoint.
Right.
And then the next time we see the dirty cops, they're at a hotel room shooting their way in.
No, I noticed that. I don't know how they knew. I'll tell you how, because they're really good cops. They may be dirty, but they're very good. They'll always find their man, even when their man is two women.
Oh, man.
Everything's stupid.
Wear a wire. Oh, my gosh. I mean, just like so many. Ugh.
One kind of running joke that I kind of liked a little bit, but again, they didn't do anything with it, is that as because Reese and Sophia are on the run, they're both fugitives
now.
You
did not like this.
I like the idea of it. The running joke that on the news every time they talk about it, Reese keeps getting shorter and Sophia keeps getting older. Like that every time. I like that. I like that as a running joke. But again, there was no payoff or anything. Did you know, by the way, that Sofia Vergara in real life is 42 years old? She'll be 43 in July.
That makes sense.
She looks. You think she looks 42? I don't think she looks 42.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, she looks older than me.
No, she doesn't.
Oh, she totally looks older than me. She doesn't look older than you.
She does.
No, she looks.
You look the same age as me, and she looks younger than both of us.
Nah. No. Yeah. No. Oh, way. Yeah. No. I look at Sofia Vergara, and I'm like, what is she, a decade older than me?
Oh, no, I would have guessed she was early 30s.
You know I think I'm only like 31, right?
Mm-hmm. And I know that you have a false image of what you look like. I know that.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is an example of that, where you think that she looks older than you. She does not look older than you. She looks younger than you.
Yeah, it's nice to know that she is much older than me, because that's what I thought she was.
Yeah, she is a few years older than you. You're right.
Yeah.
Looks younger.
No.
She looks way younger than you.
Oh, I hated her shirt that she bought. What the heck did it say? Butter my biscuits?
Something like that.
Oh, my gosh. It was just so annoying. And I hate watching anybody in a situation where they need to run and they're in ill-fitting shoes by choice. And typically that means a woman in super high heels.
Right.
And that's what we're stuck with as comedy for chunks of this film as well.
Tottering around on high heels, dragging her suitcase.
Hey,
yeah.
Hey, funny guys, Jim Gaffigan and
Mike Birbiglia.
They existed in this movie for a little bit for a paycheck. Good
trend,
for them.
Trend this year, movies in which Mike Birbiglia appeared for like 5 seconds in the first 2 minutes and then disappears. It's an Adult Beginners. That's his new thing. To show up to give you false hope in a movie. And then no.
Well, actually, here's the problem. It worked the first time he did it when it was my sister's sister, right? My sister's sister.
That's right. He had a small part at the beginning of that, yeah.
He had a great small part in the beginning of that movie. And then everybody was like, oh, all right. We'll do that with him.
Except that movie was actually good.
It was really good. My sister's sister. You guys should – it's probably on Netflix. Who knows?
Hot Pursuit, D+. What do you give it?
2 out of 10. It's just awful.
Just awful, says Jeff.
And not only that, let's dive back just a wee bit with Reese Witherspoon.
What about
as far as I forgot that she produced Gone Girl.
Gone Girl and Wild, yeah.
Yeah, and Wild, of course, and she was in Wild. But then she was also in Inherent Vice. I haven't seen The Good Lie, but supposedly people thought it wasn't awful.
Mm-hmm.
They were like kind of pleasantly surprised with what it looked like and then what it was.
Yeah.
And Mud.
She was
kind of on a nice streak. And now that's come to a halt with Hot Pursuit.
Which is how it goes, because it looked back just a few years ago, she was in This Means War. Remember This Means War?
This is equivalent. I mean, it's different, but it's equivalent.
This is worse. But yeah,
I don't know. I don't know about that at all.
This Means War
was really terrible.
I think this is worse. But my point
remember when she had to kiss Chris Pine, but she didn't want to, but then she did, and then maybe there was something there.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
The point being, the really good movies she has made really are kind of the exception.
I think This Means War is worse because Tom Hardy's in it, and it's so unfortunate that he is in that movie. Is that his only blemish? Tom Hardy's only true blemish? Otherwise, has he like – you know how it's like – it's easy to sometimes say, oh, that actor made a bad choice.
Mm-hmm.
He made a bad choice by being in This Means War. Although it didn't hurt his career status. It was just not a good movie. So maybe it wasn't a bad choice, and I'm even using that wrong.
Child 44 got nothing but bad reviews.
Oh, that's true. There we go. Okay. All right. That was enough.
Looking back, yeah. I mean, he's been in some not very good movies. Oh, he was in Sucker Punch. Ugh.
Oh, Sucker Punch.
So, yeah. No, he's, like everyone, has a few blemishes.
Yeah. There we go.
Anyway, Hot Pursuit. Let us never speak of it again. And then a movie is The D-Train. The D-Train, a Sundance premiere, now opening in pretty wide release this weekend, actually. Because it's got
pretty wide release.
Got some famous people. Jack Black and James Marsden.
Mm-hmm.
We must have reviewed this at Sundance, right? We must have talked about it.
We did. We talked about it. We had a difference of opinion.
Yes. I don't like this movie.
You dislike this movie?
Let me remember. I mean, I did it.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I just think you...
I gave it a C.
A solid C? Not even a C+? You give anything a C+. Oh, my gosh.
It's not very good. And I'll tell you why. Here's what you got. Jack Black, he's a loser who's heading
up. He's a sad sack. That's right. Normally he plays a lovable loser.
Usually he's a happy sack. This time he's a sad sack.
Correct.
And he lives in Pittsburgh, where so many losers do. And he's heads up his high school reunion committee. And the whole thing, he wants to get one of his classmates, James Marsden, is now, he thinks, a successful actor. He sees him on a TV commercial. Says, let's get him to come to the reunion, and then everyone else will follow suit.
Mm-hmm. Because he was the most popular in high school, and look at him now.
Mm-hmm.
He'll generate some buzz, and we need some buzz, people. Yeah. So let's quit calling like 400 people and focus on one man, and that man, James Marsden. I think – I could be wrong. Is he attractive?
Yeah, he's quite handsome.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
The movie honors that lovely, like with slow motion shots of him coming down like escalators and stuff like that.
Right.
It's great.
And so Jack Black's character, Dan, he concocts a series of lies for his boss to justify an excuse to go out to L.A. so he can woo Oliver into coming to the reunion. But this series of lies now requires lots of work to maintain that. And then it turns out Oliver is...
Don't.
He's a partier. He parties. He drinks a lot.
Yeah. Sorry.
What? And he's openly bisexual. That's not a secret. He's openly bisexual.
Okay.
And Dan is sort of starstruck because he thinks he's a big, famous actor, and he sort of has a man crush on him. And Oliver's sort of amused by him, and they become pals and whatever. And then things get – and then hilarity ensues. But it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
No.
It's awkward, and I normally hate getting stuck with the guy who's spiraling because of his lies. Yep. I normally dislike that in a movie, and I really liked it this time around, and it was mainly because I felt like I could kind of feel Jack Black's character is Dan. I could feel Dan's pain in trying to grapple with what to do and what to make of any of this that has occurred in his life.
Yeah, I think and, the part of the movie
– I liked that quite a bit.
Yeah, the part that's committed to his web of lies is funny. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But
and the supporting cast is just I think really
Hahn.
Solid.
Catherine Hahn is there. She's good.
Jeffrey Tambor.
Jeffrey Tambor, sure. But it's that it's the other half of the movie dealing with sort of the aftermath of Dan and Oliver's friendship that I just feel like the movie sets it up and then doesn't know what to do with it. And so so most of the jokes just sort of boil down to tee-hee-hee, something embarrassing happened. Tee-hee-hee. And there's just nothing to it. There's no larger point being made about like male friendships or the lengths that people will go to for someone's approval or about or anything that just.
Yes, I think there. See, I disagree with all of that. I think that's all there. I do.
I think that the filmmakers think that it's there, but and I think that they want it to be there, but I just don't think it's there. I think they laid the foundation and then didn't do anything with it.
I was happily exhausted from the pain when this movie was done, and I think it's one of Jack Black's best performances. Period. Like, it's in his top three. And James Marsden continues to impress me. And this is definitely one of them. And I love the fact that we actually get it felt like another indie movie would never even put you at the high school reunion. Like, it would just end before that happens.
Right.
But we get that there, and we get kind of like a new level of awkwardness that I didn't even think this movie was capable of reaching with that. And again, I really enjoyed this film. Yeah, really did.
I think it just becomes just another raunchy romantic comedy. Gets a few laughs and then just peters out halfway through.
No,
I gave it a C. What do you give it?
It's a 9 out of 10. I'm looking forward to rewatching it. And I will be honest. It was a part of the greatest movie day I've ever had in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I am.
There were a couple others on that day that also weren't very good that you loved, as I recall.
No, that's not true.
Was that the only one?
That's the only one that I think you – is that the only one that you even have seen?
I don't remember what other movies you saw on the best movie day of your life.
Sleeping with Other People.
Yep, don't remember.
Have you seen that?
Nope.
Mississippi Grind, you haven't seen?
Nope.
Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, you haven't seen.
Yeah, but Mississippi Grind is the one that you were the only one who loved it.
No, that's not true.
Literally the only person who loved it in the entire world. No, you're the only one
who
loved it. Literally the only person.
No.
I talked to everyone.
Oh, all right. Well, your story checks out.
Then there's this other movie now called Roar. It's actually from 1981, but it's being re-released now by Drafthouse Films. And this is a good example of a movie that is only interesting if you know the story behind it. Because the movie itself is bad. Do you agree that the movie itself is a bad movie?
The movie itself is a bad movie.
Yeah, it's very amateurish. It's this guy named Noel Marshall who was married to Tippi Hedren, the actress. And
from
the
Birds.
The Birds.
Yeah.
And they had a thing where they loved lions, and they actually, in real life, they lived with a bunch of lions. They had a bunch of lions on their ranch or wherever they lived, and their daughter was Melanie Griffith, and we see in this movie a young Melanie Griffith. And I had seen photographs before of a young Melanie Griffith cavorting with lions. So I knew that this was a thing.
Oh,
that
I did. Okay.
That the Hedren Marshall Griffith family grew up with lions.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they to show their love of lions, they made this movie which is about a guy who goes to Africa and lives with lions, and then he brings his wife and daughter over. And there's not really a story. There's not really a plot in the movie.
There is.
Kind of. They come.
But
and
it's
they...
surprising because you think that'll be like 20 minutes of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because you think it's all going to be about like how does everybody interact with everybody in this movie? How did like now that they're going to be reunited? But the plot is actually just like a missed connection to where Now the family ends up at the house without the dad.
Right, because he's gone to meet them or whatever and missed them. Because he's gone to meet them. Or he's busy doing something. Yeah.
And it's a big
– And they have never
– Big area to cover.
Yeah, the wife and daughters have not encountered the lions before. But the thing, right. Behind the scenes that you have to know is that these lions were not trained. And so as they made this movie, there's like 100 lions that are doing just whatever they want to basically.
Yeah, I mean – I think these are their cats.
Yeah, yeah. These are the actual lions that they live with in real life.
And more importantly, hang on. Let's not just say lions. Because we've got lions. We've got tigers. We've got leopards. We got jaguars. Do we have – we have an elephant that goes ballistic on a car or a cart or a motorcycle. What was that?
An angry elephant. Yeah, yeah.
Man, that was an angry elephant.
Mostly the lions. But yeah, a variety of big cats and other things. And – But yeah, and so as they were making the movie, people kept getting hurt. And the movie – and so as you watch the movie, knowing that these are real lions who are not trained, who are just lions, I mean you could sort of trust that anything terribly awful that happened, they wouldn't keep it in the movie. But you still keep waiting for the lions, all these near misses and they're pawing.
Oh my gosh,
and we do see people get kind of bitten here and there. And one guy's got and there's one lion who is always covered in blood. The minute we first see him, and then the whole movie, he is always covered in blood. And in real life, I mean, the cinematographer was Jan de Bont, who went on to direct Speed and other movies. He got scalped, had 220 stitches during the filming. Yeah. Tippi Hedren fractured a leg. She got bucked off the back of an elephant.
I think the correct way to watch this movie is to actually learn beforehand all of the destruction that happened.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Because if you're just watching it, it's just a badly put together movie. But as an artifact of these crazy people who made a movie with lions, and the fact that the point of the movie was, oh, lions are beautiful and we love them and they're great.
Yeah,
yeah, no, has the opposite. It makes me terrified of lions and feel like we should stay away from them all forever.
It's an hour and 40 minutes. They probably could hand over this footage to a really talented horror film editor, and he could probably make like a 45-minute, like scary as all heck thing, like an actual
probably
because of the footage, because you've never seen this kind of footage on screen before. You've never seen it.
People just screwed around with untrained lions. And granted, these were lions that they sort of lived with at their compound, but they're still lions. They were not trained at all.
Yes.
And they talk about, in the opening credits, they talk about that lions kind of do whatever they want. So they actually, they jokingly give the lions co-writing credit. Because basically you can tell they had to film whatever the lions would do is what they would go with. And it's insane. Yeah. It is completely insane.
Yes, you think it's going to be organized chaos, and then you realize this is just chaos.
No, yeah.
And not only that, it is terrible filmmaking. Like, there's music changes that are just like, this scene was really happy, but now it's not okay. But nothing's changed except for the music. Supposedly, Melanie Griffith received a little bit of plastic surgery on this movie, so you can like look and see. And I think it's quite obvious what scene she was harmed during.
So she got 50 stitches to her face.
It felt like I was hearing some like real nervous moments from her, as opposed to some acting ones.
Yeah.
You have to see this movie with people. I think that's the saddest thing. When I heard that you saw this movie alone compared to I saw it at a press screening and I was able to like sit next to a couple of critics that I know, and we just kept looking at each other dumbfounded. Yeah. Like that's what you do throughout this movie.
I didn't see it alone. I saw it with Don Taylor.
Okay.
And we looked at each other dumbfounded.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm sure with a crowd it's even better.
Yeah, it was it's insane. It is such an insane film.
If you get a chance
to
see it.
There's a bird's nod in it.
Tippi Hedren.
Oh, and there's a weird sex conversation between Tippi Hedren and Melanie Griffith toward the beginning when they're on the bus. And it was just like, why? What? Why are you having your daughter talk about the sex?
I vaguely remember that.
It was very odd.
If you get a chance to see Roar, it's sort of making the rounds. It'll be on DVD later in the year.
And Melanie Griffith is also one of the most beautiful teenagers, I think, like ever. Yeah. It's insane how like pure beauty and nice looking she is at that age.
Until that lion ripped off her face.
Yeah, no, that's right. And now we know. And by the way, Tippi Hedren currently, I think, looks better than Melanie Griffith because one of them has chosen to do a lot of surgery and one of them has not.
Yeah. Melanie Griffith, by the way, when the film was shot, was in her 20s, early 20s.
Oh, it was early 20s. Yeah. Okay. Nice. Oh, no. Wait, no. Hmm. Not when it was originally because...
She was born in 1957 and it wasn't shot in like 77, 70, like the late 70s. Well,
oh, okay. Because I was going to say, I believe the movie took like 6 years to make.
Well, yeah, I know it didn't come out until 81, but...
Yeah.
So,
okay. All right. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, story checks out. She was of legal age anyway. You can feel free to lust after her in this movie.
No way.
She was over the age of 18 for sure.
I lust after no woman except for...
Your wife. Did you forget her name?
No, I was thinking like maybe Tina Fey and Charlize Theron. I used to have a big crush on Tina Fey. I'm working through it.
Yeah.
Personality goes a long way with me.
Oh, yeah. And she's a lovely woman anyway. She's not unattractive.
She's not. Wait, did I do too many knots?
You did too many knots.
She's not.
So I don't even know what grade to give Rory because it's a bad movie, but it's fascinating to watch. So it's,
I know. I think quality of movie is like a 2, but like enjoying how bad it is like a 9.
It's definitely recommendable. I definitely recommend that you see it.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Noel Marshall's sidekick in that movie, who's like clearly doesn't actually want to be working.
Oh, terrified of these lines. Yeah, yeah. Just ridiculous. And then we have another movie that you saw and I did not, called Welcome to Me.
Welcome to Me. This is Kristen Wiig, and she's not on her meds. The actress, the character, not the actress. Mm-hmm. I don't know about that with Kristen Wiig, if she needs them.
I'm sure she's on her meds.
But anyway, she plays Alice. And Alice is a very unique individual who loves Oprah, but
lots of people love Oprah, Jeff.
You realize she's disturbed. No, the level of which she can like she'll rewatch an episode and be able to like quote everything with that episode. Like she's very, very into it. And very surprisingly, because I knew nothing about this movie, this is slight spoiler because this is the way that I enjoyed it, but she had a lottery ticket at the very beginning of the movie, and she's watching TV, and she's like looking through it, and she notices it's a winner. Mm-hmm. And all I can think of is like, oh, this person's really insane. Like she's concocted this, or she's rewatched this episode a million times on this fake ticket that she holds, or something like that.
But no, but she has one.
No, she just won $86 million.
Interesting. All right.
And so a crazy person has just won $86 million, and she decides to create a TV show that's called Welcome to Me.
Oh, that's where the title of the film comes in.
It's all about her working through her stuff, but like she's a crazy person working through her stuff. So she's like, remember that time in high school where that girl stole my makeup? Mm-hmm. Like she's getting into that and she's doing recreations. And it's really it's funny and it's uncomfortable and it's a great supporting cast. James Marsden. Yeah, I don't know if you heard of him. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Jason Leigh, who shockingly has like next to nothing to do with this movie. She's not bad with what she does. It's just weird that she's in it for such a small role. Wes Bentley, very nicely done with this. But then there's also Tim Robbins, Joan Cusack, Linda Cardellini, yes. Mm-hmm. From Freaks and Geeks and many other things after that. But yeah, it's that little thing where they make these characters real enough to where then you actually can see them dealing with the insane event of like an $86 million lottery or being a producer that's handed a like giant check and said, yep, just make me something that looks like an Oprah show. Mm-hmm. And things like that. So I liked all of that quite a bit. And Kristen Wiig is channeling those weird, quirky things that she's able to do, but using them mainly for drama. But still, it's like a little bit humorous every time she like has a little mannerism that you're just like, oh, that's a Saturday Night Live face. That's very nice to see in this movie. So, yeah.
All right.
I liked it. It's a 7 out of 10. I would recommend this movie.
7 out of 10. All right.
Yeah.
Now, my parsing of the MPAA rating It's rated R for sexual content, some graphic nudity, language, and brief drug use. Tell me if I'm wrong. Graphic nudity usually means comedy penis.
You are wrong.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Is it not any kind of penis? Is it dramatic penis?
You are – no penis.
Really? Oh, really? It's a lady nudity.
Yep.
Usually graphic nudity in the rating means it's a comedy penis.
It's the downstairs business.
Oh, yeah. No, I gather what it would be if it's graphic. It would have to be the downstairs. You don't see those. You don't see that very often in movies.
Yeah. But,
well, good for them. It's not Kristen Wiggs, is it? Is that a spoiler? That would surprise me if Kristen Wiig does full frontal nudity in this movie. Is it her character? But like a body double?
I think it's her.
You think it's really her? You think she really?
Yeah.
Like, do you see her face in the same shot as the downstairs?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, good for you, Kristen Wiig. Letting it all hang out.
Not a sexy scene.
Okay.
Maybe that's why it's graphic. But well, it's not like – it didn't disturb me.
No, it's a graphic means that you see either
the downstairs.
The downstairs, yeah, is what that means is graphic, yeah. The front downstairs.
The bush, not the chicken and the eggs, which was the reference what? In Hot Pursuit. Chicken and eggs? Is that what they called it?
For a man, yeah. That was her literally translating the Spanish slang for it, yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Kristen, all right. So you're saying you get to see Kristen's wig.
Yes, in fact, you really yes.
Oh, good
because
good for her.
Yeah, it's present.
All right then.
It would make a very small bald man happy. There'd be enough there to go around potentially. Anyway,
so those are the movies, and now it's time for question of the week.
The question.
Because we asked you guys, sort of with A Hot Pursuit, which seems like a lady version of Midnight Run. And so we asked you guys, what other movie should they make a lady version of?
I'm realizing that I think, like, when I was looking at these as they came in, and we'll look at them closely now, I was just like, yep. Like, I'm on board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that... And Nico's suggestion, Glengarry Glen Ross. He said it would be cool to see an ensemble of great actresses at different ages, but equal levels of deviousness as the original cast. And then he says probably less swearing, too. I wonder if they would do...
You know what?
I feel like if they were going to do it, if they're going to do Glengarry Glen Ross, they're going to keep the swearing, because that's part of the what that play is known for. And David Mamet, kind of known for that. So yeah, they'd probably keep the swearing.
If I remember correctly... whoever was doing the series of live reads in L.A., I can't remember the director. I kind of want to say...
Wasn't Jason Reitman?
Jason Reitman, yes. I think he did an all-woman reading of that film. Yes. I think he did.
I think that... And especially, it's got different ages. That could be a great cast if they got the right people. Mm-hmm. I'd be on board with that. Dallas, one of our Dallases, says over the top.
We have so many Dallases.
Oh, we have two. This one says over the top, female arm wrestling contest. Lena Headey, and throughout all, she's able to rekindle her relationship with her estranged daughter, Abigail Breslin. I don't think this is a good idea just because Over the Top is a bad movie.
Whoa! When's the last time you saw it?
A couple years ago for my column, Eric's Bad Movies.
I'm going to have to disagree. I haven't seen the movie for at least 20 years, but I'm going to have to disagree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty bad.
Let's try that.
I wonder if there is a female arm wrestling circuit.
Yeah, there is.
Is there? Yeah. Is that on one of the ESPNs? Is that on the Ocho?
The Ocho.
What's another one here?
No, mine's here we go, finally. It wasn't coming up. Joby says Stand By Me. Always loved watching it when I was little. Would have liked it even more if it featured tomboys.
Yeah, all right.
There was a not similar enough of a film, but there was that movie called Now and Then which tried to tap into some of that.
That nostalgia and the 60s stuff, yes. Yeah.
But, like, featured young women doing that.
Was Rosie O'Donnell in that?
Yeah, that's right. Rosie O'Donnell, Demi Moore, Melanie Griffith. Keep in mind, I can't remember anything about, like, my day-to-day life.
Right, right.
Who is the fourth?
I'm going to go with Madonna.
I'm going to go with nobody important.
All right.
And I feel bad for saying that.
Jeffrey suggests 12 Angry Men. You get a smart, respectable type like Kate Blanchett or Jodie Foster, or maybe go younger with Elizabeth Moss to head up the jury of our favorite actresses. Again, kind of like with Glengarry Glen Ross, it would be a great showcase. Get just some 12 great actresses in there.
I haven't watched it yet, but I've been very happy with Amy Schumer's Inside Amy Schumer this season so far. And supposedly she just did something with 12 Angry Men that is getting a lot of good buzz. So I'm looking forward to watching that.
Yeah, apparently did a spot on parody of that.
Adrian says a comedy like The Trip or The Trip to Italy with two women talking about their insecurities, fears, triumphs, and taking jabs at each other. Cast Rose Byrne and Kristen Wiig. And wow, I would love that.
I think they'd probably be good. Although I don't know if they necessarily would be as good as Steve Coogan and what's the other one's name?
Steve something? Are they both Steves?
I can't remember now. But they, those two, I feel like are a team, and I don't know that have Rose Byrne and Kristen Wiig worked together?
Yeah, Bridesmaids. I don't think they are a team. Oh, but you're saying you need something like you need that you need an established history like a Tina Fey and an Amy Poehler.
Like that you kind of thing, I think. I feel like that would be better, yeah. History. Yeah,
well, see,
yeah.
That's the thing with The Trip, but, though.
Rob Brydon. Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon. That's that.
Rob brings Steve along, and Steve is a little bit surprised that he's going along for the ride, if I remember correctly. Right? It wasn't the other way around? Or was it Rob was – I can't remember now with the first one.
Wasn't Rob the food writer who brings along Steve?
Yes, right.
But and maybe I'm wrong, but I thought that those two actors had a history of working together. But maybe I'm
wrong. Well, I mean, The Trip was originally a TV show that was 6 episodes for the BBC. That was edited into the film, I believe.
I know. But before that, I mean, like, I thought they go way back.
I don't know.
I could be wrong.
I don't.
That was the impression that I had, that they went
Justin
way back.
Justin says The Shawshank Redemption.
What?
Female prison with Jennifer Lawrence in the lead and Viola Davis in the red role. Interesting. Who's Gwendolyn Christie?
Gwendolyn Christie?
Yeah.
Is that an actress?
As the warden. That's what Justin is suggesting.
I don't know Gwendolyn Christie by name.
You know what that means?
Hmm.
It must mean she's an actress from a TV show, like one TV show, and neither of us have ever watched it. Let's find out.
Usually when there's someone in a movie that I don't know, I say Game of Thrones. Am I right? She in Game of Thrones?
She's the beautiful, huge fighter in Game of Thrones.
All right, there you go.
That's right. You don't.
I don't watch Game of Thrones.
You don't watch Game of Thrones.
No.
And I do, but I don't know any actor or character name in that show. But I love it. Oh, such a good show.
I know nothing. She's 6'3". She'd be a good prison warden.
Yeah, she really would be. I would watch that because you know what would be nice to have. To have a prison, like a female prison movie that isn't necessarily just about like women in heat.
Well, I feel like there'd need to be some of that. They can at least take some showers, right?
They could take showers, yes.
But
this is good because everybody's enjoying Orange is the New Black, but this could be, you know, a deeper prison film. Mm-hmm. Although that has had some really significant episodes. Anyway.
Shawshank is the New Redemption. That would be the... Never mind. Diane says, The Three Amigos. The correct answer, the female cast, would be Amy Poehler, Tina Fey, and Kristen Wiig.
This is – we asked who should –
That's right. We asked for a potential Three Amigos remake.
That's right. And she had that brilliant answer, and it is.
Mind you, we are not saying that anyone should actually remake The Three Amigos.
No, nobody should ever do it.
Nobody should do that. But
I think we would we would be super excited if they said we're remaking Three Amigos and it's going to be Amy Poehler, Tina Fey, and Kristen Wiig.
Yeah, I mean, really, I would be on board with that.
Tremendously excited.
Well, and the original, of course, was SNL affiliated people, and Lorne Michaels produced it. And
it's the reason he stepped away in like 84, 86, whatever.
No, he stepped away in 80. from SNL.
But he was busy. It was a specific reason that he was. Three Migos was a reason why he was away from Saturday Night Live at the time. I can't remember exactly.
Nico says Castaway, but it's just the one character. Come on, Nico. Don't waste our time.
Ooh, Viola Davis is getting lots of work. Nick says Lethal Weapon.
Lots of imaginary work.
Yeah. Oh, this is probably how she feels in real life, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Viola Davis, that's why she did TV. Danny Glover, she's doing that role. And then Emily Blunt in the Mel Gibson role. Emily Blunt. Hmm. Any chance to give her a little more action would be great.
And you wouldn't have to change mostly so far. You wouldn't have to change very much about the stories. Three Amigos setting three women. If it is still the '20s down into Mexico,
yeah, you'd have to change an O to an A.
Well, and there's and there'd be different issues with women traveling alone and being the scary Wild West and
right whatever. At that time period specifically.
Yeah. But yeah, otherwise there's not much that would have to be different. Yeah. I would imagine the 12 Angry Women, maybe the case would involve a woman. And maybe you could bring in some of those, some issues that would only apply to a female defendant, but wouldn't apply to a male one, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
Lots of stuff to do with a vagina. I gotcha.
It'd be a vagina-related crime.
Yeah. Lots of monologues just all about vaginas.
Right.
And they're so angry.
Matthew says Saving Private Ryan, but I don't know how you would do that with all women. Because it's, it would have to be set in the future, like it's
right,
or something.
Yeah, we can sadly do that with some other minorities. How we put like some minorities in the front lines during wars, and it's like, here, guys, you go do it first.
But yeah, or a fictional war, I suppose. But yeah, in general,
maybe a fictional future war when the women finally realize that they should be running everything and rise up.
Yeah, although even if that does happen, I feel like their first act after rising up and taking power would be to not send women to the front lines of war.
Right.
If anything, you boost up the male presence at that point.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah, I don't see a scenario where the front lines were on D-Day, where it's the women out front.
No.
I just don't see that.
They'd just be like cleaning up the beach the whole time. Is that what you think?
Oh, I'm getting sand in my shoes. No, that would be you.
Ugh. Working on their tan.
Ugh. Dames, am I right?
Ugh. I love women so much more than men. I hope everybody knows that by now. Let's see. Ooh, Wayne's World redo with Emma Stone and someone like Jenny Slate. No, Dallas, Jenny Slate. Delete someone like. Instead of a public access show, they would do a movie-based show on YouTube. Same plot and attitude. The girls are still dorky and act like Wayne and Garth. I wouldn't want to see Wayne's World redo, but if it was done right, I would be game.
Yeah, see, I feel like that doesn't sound so much like a
remake
of Wayne's World as a ripoff of Wayne's World.
Yeah.
But as far as having a female duo who have a little public access or a YouTube show or something, so Jesse says that this actually mostly describes the TV show iCarly, which of course I haven't watched, but I know that it's a show.
Isn't that like on Nickelodeon or something?
Nickelodeon or Disney, one of those. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I think it's about a girl named Carly, probably, who's got a YouTube show. Be my guess.
All right.
Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah. Starring all the best co-stars from Orange Is the New Black.
Yeah, but then that gets into what I feel like is a psychological difference between men and women that I have a
women
hard.
Women don't necessarily need to kill.
I find a hard time. Don't you find it hard to imagine women being because the emotions there are it's stubbornness and pride and not wanting to be wrong and aggression. And I feel like the women, if a bunch of women did a bank robbery like that, that even if things went bad, I don't feel like it would go bad in that way. I feel like they would resolve it in different ways other than pointing guns at each other. Maybe I'm wrong, and I don't mean to suggest that women can't be as terrible as men. But
yeah, why can't – I don't like the way that you're talking because I feel like women have every right to shoot up a bunch of guys.
Oh, they have every right to. Absolutely every right to. I just don't feel like generally they would.
Really? I feel like every news story coming out now is about a woman recklessly shooting people. You don't feel that way?
No. Yeah. No. I feel like it's 100% men. So I don't know.
Women in charge, please. anyway.
That, now I'm curious about how that would go. The bank robbery goes wrong. Someone gets shot. And so now, I mean, they would turn on each other for sure. But would they be killing each other and like torturing the cop and all that? I don't know what they would do. I don't know what women do. I don't know how they think.
Oh, here.
Hmm.
They're all Michelle Rodriguez. Now you can see it.
Okay. Well, if they're all Michelle Rodriguez, then all right, yeah.
Now you get.
Is she playing all the roles?
Yes.
Michelle Rodriguez in six parts?
It's your dream, but then she realizes how difficult it is to work with Michelle Rodriguez. And then she's like, that bee.
Man.
And then like there's like fights beyond that.
I want out of this. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's just constantly yelling at Michelle Rodriguez.
That's funny.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah.
Mine is, I think they should do it with like, I don't know, like a comedy sci-fi or something from like 1984. Or 85.
like a Lady Ghostbusters, maybe?
There. Done. Mm. I think that would be good.
That's not a bad idea.
I don't know who would play what, but yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be good. What about you? What about you?
The same thing. Sure. Ghostbusters. Yeah. Our question of the week for next week, you know, Mad Max Fury Road is coming out.
Yeah, I do.
Directed by George Miller. And he made the original Mad Max movies. Then he also made the Happy Feet, the cartoons. Which I love that he made Mad Max and Happy Feet. But so now this is him remaking basically one of his own movies. So it got us to thinking, what other film do you think should be remade by its director? And we'll say a film of at least 20 years old. And thinking of, you know, maybe how the director has changed in the intervening years or has gotten better.
Right.
Maybe something that directed it early on that you think they could do a better job of it now. Just what film should be remade by its same director?
Couple of things. Make sure the director's still alive.
If the director is dead, then it's not going to happen.
Probably,
sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
He or she will probably not do a good job.
Yeah, no. I mean, some movies directed by dead guys have been okay, but they are the exception.
Right.
Movie at least 20 years old should be remade by its director.
Hey, guess what?
Hmm.
My 3D screening of Mad Max has been changed to a 2D screening, and I'm so happy.
Oh, nice. I'm very happy for you.
So happy.
Mazel tov.
Thank you.
Mine is still 3D, I believe.
Mm.
Although I think it's at a theater that does not have IMAX, so it won't be an IMAX, which I feel like it's supposed to be.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know. Mine is at a theater that does have IMAX. I don't know if I'm seeing it in IMAX yet. I know I could if I was to see the critics screening during the day, but I can't make that one, unfortunately.
Oh, see, we don't even get one of those.
Poor
gotta go to the nighttime one.
Yeah.
What'd you watch?
Oh, great question. Nice. I watched Lost River.
Lost River. The Ryan Gosling directed that, yes?
Yes, he did. He does not star in it. And, you know, that's a movie with Ryan Gosling is typically better than a movie without Ryan Gosling.
I agree.
And that is the case in this particular situation.
A Ryan Gosling movie with no Ryan Gosling. What's the point?
Yeah. And I think you guys know about the movie, but you probably didn't see it. After Drive, what's the director's name?
Nicholas Winding Refn.
Yes. Made a movie called Only God Forgives.
I remember that. I saw it.
You and I did see it. And Ryan Gosling was in it. Mm-hmm. And it's a different vibe than Drive. There's some good stuff there. I actually think it's a pretty interesting movie, but I wouldn't necessarily want to sit through it again. And it's quite obvious that Ryan Gosling was terribly inspired by Only God Forgives.
Mm.
And it feels like a companion piece. Slightly down a notch.
All right.
It's a first time director clearly wanting to focus on a little bit more imagery than substance.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to go a little bit like Twin Peaks on you with some of this stuff.
All right.
And a single mom is played by Joan from Mad Men, Christina Hendricks.
It's starting to sound like a review. I just asked what you watched.
Why am I reviewing it?
I don't know.
Ben Mendelsohn dances for a moment.
All right.
And I love Ben Mendelsohn.
He's good.
So anyway. Wow, that is weird. I actually just fell into a review. I didn't mean to.
It's second nature to you now.
Ugh.
You know what I saw a couple weeks ago?
I'm in too deep.
I saw Bound by the Wachowski brothers. They were the brothers then. No. Wait, no.
Yeah.
Yes, they're the brothers. Sorry. I got confused which direction one of them had gone. Yes, Bound, which I had never seen before. And it was it was rated NC-17 because it's got some lesbian business. And have you seen this movie, Bound?
Yeah.
It's good. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
I was not prepared for it. It's such a twisty, turny, crime, suspense, noir, thriller kind of thing. Greatly enjoyed it. The thing that amused me about it is that this finally is a prime example of the thing you hate, where it starts with a flash forward that actually does hurt the story, I think. Because without that flash forward, we would not at all suspect that that was going to be happening. I feel like it deflates the tension of that part of it.
Agreed.
But a terrific movie. Oh, what a fun, enjoyable movie.
It's been forever. How I don't even remember. Christopher Maloney is in it. Yeah. Maloney?
Christopher Maloney. Maloney. Yeah.
Maloney. How is he in it? Like, is he good? Is it a small part? Is it a sizable part? I can't remember.
You know.
He's always somebody that – he's always been interesting, that guy. Sometimes good, sometimes not, sometimes insignificant, sometimes a shining beacon of hope and light in an otherwise ordinary film. But,
he's fine.
No,
it's a sizable role. Mostly Joey Pants is in it. Joe Pantoliano.
Yes.
He's the main guy. Remembering him more. And, of course, Gina Gershon and Jennifer Tilly. And it's probably even more enjoyable if you enjoy – lesbians being lesbians.
Yes.
It's got some scenes.
Yes.
Of that nature.
And has Jennifer Tilly ever been better in a movie? I don't think so.
Probably not.
I think this is her best.
Seems unlikely.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. Bound. Yeah. I also saw Reanimator for the first time.
I don't know if I've ever seen it. I don't know.
It's, kind of a cheesy 1985 horror, like Lovecraft kind of a thing. It's fun. Mm-hmm. Enjoyable. Mm-hmm. That's all I got.
Yeah, I think that's all I got.
All right. Let's update people briefly on the Summer Box Office Challenge. It's just gotten off. We've just started the Summer Box
it's
Office
over.
Challenge. No, it is far from over, my friend. Far from over. Jeff had Avengers Age of Ultron on his list, which, of course, will be the biggest opening weekend of the summer. And sure enough, it made – how much did it make? It made $191 million, which is less than the first Avengers did its opening weekend. So I feel like this one's going to tank. So you're off to a good start, $191 million to nothing. But then this week I've got Hot Pursuit, which is – man. Hot Pursuit was my last choice. And maybe it'll be a surprise hit. It's not very heartening knowing how bad it is. Like, that is not going to help.
It's always unfortunate to root for such a bad movie.
Yeah, Hot Pursuit is a bad movie, but please go out and buy many tickets to it this weekend to help me in the contest. don't see it. Don't actually sit through it, but buy the tickets for it.
I can't wait to see where we're at the end of May.
Mm.
It could be so ugly for you. And then you're just hoping for Jurassic World. That's it. That's what it comes down to. If you tank in May,
then I still have Jurassic World and Ant-Man.
Yeah, but I have
could be huge. You got a bunch of Wednesday movies, and I bet one of yours is going to move to Wednesday.
I bet one of yours is going to move to Wednesday.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens.
How dare
you? We'll see what happens. Join us all summer as we bicker about the box office.
Yeah.
That brings us to the end of our programming day here on WMovieBS. Signing off our broadcast day. To recap, Hot Pursuit is not good. I didn't care for the D Train for the most part. You loved it.
It's a really good movie.
Roar is a crazy movie about lions that you should see.
So nuts.
And then apparently Welcome to Me is good. Or good enough.
It is. Yeah, it's good enough. Definitely good enough.
Question of the week. Tell us what movie of at least 20 years old ought to be remade by its same director. That'll be on Facebook. You can always email us at moviebspdx@gmail.com. And that is it then. So until next week, for MovieBS with Baron Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I'm Jeff Baer.
Thank you for listening, and good day.
I said good day.